the Underdog Podcast from SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty.
Football fans, welcome back to another episode of the Underdog Podcast, the home of P6 football at SB Nation. I am your host, Joe Serpico. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Serp. On the other side of the mic is my man, Joe Brobeck. What's up, bud?
I forgot we changed that intro.
See, that's what I'm here for.
Someone's got to, you know, be the professional.
Yeah, I got it. That's why there's two of us to do this gig here.
That's true.
But the place of the purpose. Jesus, what was that word I just tried to come up with?
Wow, that was interesting.
Yeah,
the purpose of start.
Yeah, aren't we? The purpose of this show is obviously we're going to talk the American Athletic Conference. But we're going to kick it off what we've been calling our Joe Talk Fantasy Challenge. That's where me and Joe pick against each other. We're going to pick a couple guys here. So, Joe, what you got for me this week?
So, you are first, I believe we agreed upon. So, we're doing AAC running backs, picking up off the AAC theme. So, if you know anything, we did quarterbacks last week. Or last time, I should say, not last week. We're doing running backs this time. So what do you think is going to be next time?
Kickers.
Yes. There. I like that answer. So, all right. Running backs. So we have Kenneth Gainwell against Temple. We have Michael Warren against Houston. Jordan Cronkright against BYU. Darius Bradwell against UConn. And then I put in both Tulsa running backs against Navy just to add a little spice to it.
Wait, am I allowed to pick them together?
Nope, you pick one.
Oh, that's not fair.
I'll give you a hint. I'm not picking either of them.
Yeah, probably.
So if you want both of them, you probably get to have them. Then the ghost team just gets whoever. What do you got?
See, I feel like so. I'm going to have to go with Gainwell versus my
He's
Temple House.
On. Fire.
Yeah, that's why you have to.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
All right, now you're up too.
Now I'm up. I'm probably going to go Bradwell against UConn.
That's the two I was debating between.
Yeah, and then the next one I feel like
it's tough.
I'm optimistic about Houston's defense going forward. Now they've had time to heal and figure things out on their bye week. But Cincinnati's just too good. I'm going to go Warren. So Bradwell and Warren for me, just to play it safe, would probably be the worst decision I could make. But that's what I'm doing.
Well, that's leaving me with Cronkright.
Against BYU. Interesting.
Yep. I mean, so I can't take one of these guys that share reps, I guess we should say.
Right.
So, you know, for the fantasy purpose, I got to go with him over there.
By the way, you're losing now? I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, no, I let you. You are in charge of the points. I'm in charge of the intro.
There you go. So I have 121, you're at 117, the ghost team's at 105.
As long as, man, you made a big jump.
I did.
I was going to say, I remember you being behind me, actually.
I was. The last time I got 32 from King and 26 from Bichelle, and you got only 14 apiece from Gabriel and Russo. So that didn't help you.
Nope.
Oh, well.
It happens.
It's all fun and games.
All right, you just mentioned Gabriel. I guess let's segue into another loss for the Knights. Ended the Yeah, I know. It is a little bit of a stinger to the conference a little bit, but then at the same time they have more teams ranked this week than I have all season, so I don't really know how necessarily it's a bad thing. But yeah, they end their AAC winning streak at 19 games, and I think the more impressive one, honestly, it was the 30-point streak. We ended at 31, the longest since 1936.
Dang.
Yep. Interesting. And then, yeah, I mean, if you're Cincinnati, we were all talking on our Slack channel about that game on, I believe it was Friday night. Yeah, Friday night. And Bearcats defense, man. I mean, they literally made it hell all night for Dylan Gabriel. Offensive line didn't help whatsoever, though.
No, it was a bad bad performance by that group. And I think it's hard. The general fan just tends to they kind of always want to blame play calling. But I don't think that the play calling was the problem. It's like if you watch the Cincinnati's D-line against UCF's offensive line, it was clear which one was better. And it wasn't even close. And Cincinnati sent pressure and various different blitzes that UCF was not ready for. And I don't care who's playing quarterback, it's not going to end well. And if you look on the other side, Desmond Ridder didn't look much better. Like, mm-hmm. he played better, but it really wasn't that much better. UCF made him uncomfortable, and the only difference is that he ran for a good chunk of yards, and Gabriel's just going to sit there and try to make plays with his arm. So that was the big difference, and it's, I don't know, it's kind of sad in a way, because I don't think you or I or me, whatever, English, I don't think either of us thought this was going to happen, especially not two losses this early. I mean, we're 6 weeks in and UCF has two losses. That's just not something either of us could imagine.
No, I didn't think so. I mean, I think of the two games that they played, no, because there was Stanford in there too. I would say maybe they were the two teams, but I guess we can throw them in there that you could see on their schedule. But like I was kind of alluding to before, you know, it is a little bit of a sting, because now some people are seeing Cincinnati, you know, they might not be ranked that way, but they're seeing Cincinnati as the best team in the conference. And that might be true, to be honest. I mean, we can maybe talk about that for a second, because if you think about it, it's a kind of a race now. If you're between them, Cincinnati, Memphis, SMU, you know, they're all in the rankings these days, and it really is up in the air.
Yeah, well, so the East, it seems we're down to, unless Temple decides to figure out who they're going to be, it's down to Cincinnati and UCF, and obviously the Bearcats have the upper hand in that division. And then Tulsa almost beats SMU in the West, and it was already crowded to begin with, and now you have, even though SMU 6-0, you know, they almost lose to a Tulsa team that many counted out before the season even began, but they're proving to be better because they actually have a quarterback that can throw the ball. So the West is still just as crowded as it's probably even more crowded than you or I thought. But yeah, the conference as a whole just seems to be, it's a good competitive, but that also could mean that we have a 2 or 3 loss champion.
Yeah, and that has been the case in this conference actually for a while. I mean, before UCF went on the run, it was, you know, it was Houston that was doing it. They were the one that was, you know, always hitting double-digit wins. And then before that, it was, you know, UCF again. And then you also had USF in the mix. We won't get into just what's going on down in South Florida. Well, maybe a little bit later.
But yeah, it's a gift and a curse. You have all these teams that are playing really well, but at the same time, that means that somebody's got to lose the games. And if these teams are really that close, then, you know, anybody could win. And that also, like I said, could mean that there's 2 or 3 lost teams playing for a championship.
Yeah, we shall see. We can't move forward without talking about that crazy SMU game. 3 overtimes. I mean, the way the game ends with that Prochet touchdown grab, he gets the feed in. Originally it was called incomplete. I mean, down 21, there literally was no better comeback in football, let's say in the AAC this season. Maybe even the past couple of years, honestly.
Yeah, you could put, I guess you could make the argument of UCF's comebacks against Memphis last couple of years.
Touche.
But yeah, you're right. Like, there's not many comebacks that you could put in that category. I'm sure there's a couple others maybe, but this one definitely stuck out. And it, you know, the fact that they came back against Tulsa, which I think we learned a lot about Tulsa too that I don't think a lot of people are talking about, but this SMU team is. Even the last couple of years when we had Courtland Sutton and Trey Quinn on the team, that still only managed to win, I think it was either 7 or 8 wins was their best season. So it still wasn't even – they had a good offense, but their defense was horrible. So it was tough to say that they were doing well as a program. And now they're 6-0 for the first time since 1982. And they're – they're on top of the conference right now. You could argue that Cincinnati might be better, but SMU is the first team in the conference to become bowl eligible, and that's not something we thought would happen coming into this year. But it's cool to see how this is a program that since 1989, they were 113 and 223. So they were just brutal. And they had more double-digit loss seasons than they did with seasons with a 500 record or better since that time. So it's just cool to see how far they've come, and they have a bunch of guys on their roster, especially on offense with Shane Bouchel, Xavier Jones, and James Prochet, among others, that they're overlooked and they wound up at SMU, or, you know, they're, you know, in Bouchel's case that Texas didn't want them anymore. So he moved on and made a decision for his career, and now they're the best team in the conference. And that catch at the – I mean, Prochet was having a monster game to begin with, but that catch at the end of the game was just incredible.
Yeah. He's just proven to be – well, okay. I was just about to say he's proven to be the best receiver in the conference, but I kind of want to – before we move on to something else here – you brought it up. I think it was you that brought it up in our Slack channel. The argument between Gabriel Davis and Prochet. So I kind of wanted to get it, you know, on air here. So which one do you think is the better receiver right now in the conference?
I think right now Prochet is the better receiver. I think in the long run, Davis will be better. But right now it's hard to argue against Prochet because he's having monster games. SMU's on fire, and he's already had 2 or 3 one-handed catches this year that were just like, how'd he make it? And then the catch to win the game was just another one. So there's a video that SMU posted in the preseason of him making a one-handed grab in practice, and it was almost like a warning to the rest of the conference, like, I'm coming for everybody, and he has not disappointed. And I think that if UCF were also undefeated, that Davis would be getting a lot more attention. Because towards the end of the game against Cincinnati, Gabriel was looking for him pretty much every play. And there were a couple balls that Davis caught, and I'm pretty sure he's the only receiver in the conference that can make those catches.
Yeah. Some of those were, yeah, just because of his size, and that's what I like, you know, in this argument here, that he's just a matchup nightmare with just how big he is and the speed that he has. And don't get me wrong, I mean, you know, it's kind of like pick your poison really with these two because they're both phenomenal. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see that this conference is just pumping out receivers, because I mean SMU's got another guy, Reggie Roberson, and that's pretty damn good too. That's probably going to be at the next level, and it's, you know, we got plenty of these guys coming out of the AAC. But yeah, if I have to pick between the two, I would, yeah, like I said, Gabriel's got to be the guy, just because, like I said in the channel, he's just a matchup nightmare. There's not many defenders that can keep up with his speed, his size. I think that's what's going to make – he might go real high in the draft.
Yeah, the difference between him and Prochet is that granted, Prochet's catch was very contested, but with Davis, is if he doesn't get separation, he still has a chance to win the ball. If it's a jump ball, he can win it confidently because he has, like you said, he has that size, and He's tall and has that length to just go up and get it and overpower a smaller defender, where Prochet's not exactly that the bigger receiver. He relies on his speed, the separation, and if he has to, he can make those catches, but you're going to take Davis in those situations more.
Both fun to watch.
For sure.
All right. At this point, let's move on to our over-unders before we look ahead to week... What week are we on now? Seven?
Seven already.
Jesus. It's week...
Dude, once the season gets seven? Rolling, you and I are always amazed at what... Like, next week, it's going to be week eight, and we're like... We're 2 weeks into the... Or 2 months into the season.
Yeah, right? It's incredible.
Just insane.
Time flies when you're having fun. That's exactly. What they say, at least.
Exactly.
Why is this fun and work is not?
Oh, man. All right, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I will go... I went first. No, I went first for the last one, so I'll let you go first this time.
All right. So, by the way, I'm at zero. I should be at zero for 2 weeks because I got two of your picks exactly right.
You're still at zero?
I'm still at zero, and you're at 67, so you're not far behind.
All right, I did something right.
There you go. All right, so these are for you. These are your guesses. And we'll find the difference. If you get them right, you go back to zero, like we've done already. We've been doing pretty good. Our guesses actually haven't been that bad. Minus...
We have given each other some layups sometimes, too, though.
Oh, for sure, but still, some of our guesses are pretty good. All right, first one I got for you.
Hit me.
Number of upsets that happened in the AAC this week.
Upsets in terms of the spread?
Yeah, and if there's no spread, we'll determine it. Because I think Navy and Tulsa is a pick 'em, but we'll go by power rankings if we need a tiebreaker.
I have Tulsa as a 1-point favorite.
Okay, well then go. Yeah, if there's a spread, I'm pretty sure Memphis is favored against Temple. Cincinnati's favored against
UConn. Hell no. Let me look at this actually. The upset. Well, I've got to go with the one. Temple University.
Going one.
Got to go with Temple.
Temple. You said Tulsa's favored by one.
Yeah. So wait, I'm telling you how many upsets? How many?
Yep, of the five, there's five games. So how many of those will be upsets? So between Temple, Houston, USF, UConn, and Navy, how many of them are pulling off an upset?
Two.
Two?
I feel like I have to pick that number.
Right? Seriously. Yeah. Of those games.
Yeah.
All right.
Too many iffies.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so going to that Memphis Temple game that you mentioned, I want to give me the total number of first downs from that game.
Total number of first downs.
Dude, talk about a stat you never pay attention to.
Oh my gosh.
Not you in general, but just anybody.
Actually, so because of how bad Temple was on third down a couple weekends ago, I was paying attention to it. So. Okay, total number of first downs.
Yes, sir.
Give me 37.
37, I like it. If Memphis gets going, they'll get that for sure. They could get that by themselves.
Whoa, easy now.
Ah, I'm just kidding. That would be a blowout. All right, so Houston had 2 weeks off to prepare for Cincinnati. We saw what Clayton Toon could do against North Texas. But Cincinnati obviously gave UCF a ton of trouble in the passing game. So I want you to tell me how many passing yards Clayton Toon will pass for this weekend.
Sometimes we think too much alike. I have one similar to this. Total number of pass yards for Clayton Toon this week.
Yes, sir. I believe he had 160 against North Texas, but that was also his first game.
Yeah. Well, the number that first popped into my head was 200.
Sometimes you got to go with your gut.
Yeah, 200.
Dude, you went with your gut last time, and you only had 67, so.
I think I did something all right.
You did all right, yeah. You were close on a bunch of them, so. All right, last one I have. We have Navy and their rushing attack, or passing attack now, but we're sticking with rushing. And we talked about the two Tulsa running backs in our Joe Talk Fantasy Challenge, so we're going to highlight that aspect of the game. I want you to give me the total number of rushing yards for both Navy and Tulsa as a team.
Ooh, I like this one. Total number of rushing yards. Man, I got to...
It's all right. If you got to do some research, we can fill some time.
410.
410. All right.
You know, Navy's got to put up at least 250.
Yeah, I feel like that's... I think the weird thing, though, is you and I have talked about this, is that Navy's passing the ball with some decent efficiency. So they're not...
Don't worry.
Rushing the ball quite a bit, but...
Don't worry. Hold your horses here, all right?
Yeah, all right.
Hold your horses here, all right? It's my turn to give over-unders now.
Let's do it.
You think too much alike. It's kind of creepy.
It is weird.
All right.
We met each other. We're super far away, but yet same mind.
All right. I'll start with the one that you were just literally alluding to. You know, you were talking about how Navy likes to all of a sudden chuck it a little bit. So you gave me total number of rushing yards for this game. How about you give me the total number of pass attempts by Malcolm Perry this week?
Total number of pass attempts by Malcolm Perry. He has what? He has 33 on the year. And they played 5 games. Have they played 5 games? I can't keep track. That's the other thing with college football is I never know.
Yeah, because they're all different weeks.
Like, who's 6-0? Who's 4-2?
Navy has played 4 games.
They played 4 games?
Yeah, they are 3-1.
Jeez.
I'm already wrong about my prediction of them only winning 2 games.
I'm going to go with 7 pass attempts for Mr. Perry.
7. All right. I like it.
Watch, he'll throw 15. That's stupid.
I was thinking more like 11, to be honest. That was the number I was thinking in my head. All right. Number. What was your thing for me about Clayton Toon again?
I said passing yards for Clayton Toon.
Oh, that's right. All right. You said passing yards for Clayton Toon. This is why this is so weird.
Yes.
I wrote down here. All right. So the one thing that made King prolific was the fact that he was not just a good passer, but he was a prolific runner as well. And Clayton Toon obviously is not the same guy, but, you know, he can move the ball a little bit on the ground. So total number of rushes for Toon this week.
Just rush attempts?
Yes, and that obviously includes when he gets sacked as well, which I hate that, by the way. I literally hate that rule, but yes.
Yeah, it's weird. It is dumb that that counts, but...
It doesn't count in the NFL, but it does in college, which is so stupid.
Right. Rush attempts? Oh, man. I'm going to go with 14, because that's the first number that pops into my head.
All right.
I hate saying that number, because it's like I just think of it as how many times are you going to take off running, but you're right, sacks count. So that's... And I feel like Cincinnati's defense is going to give Houston's offensive line some issues.
Mm-hmm. All right, up next for me. I picked them earlier in our Joe Talk Fantasy Challenge. Give me the number of total yards for Kenneth Gainwell against my Owls this week. And let me throw this in there. It is homecoming weekend.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go 130 because they're on the road. He's been on a tear, but you gotta down to earth.
I did say total yards.
Oh, total yards?
Yeah.
No. Then let's go 150. I don't think it's gonna be that big.
Alright. And then my last one. Tulane is I gotta flip the page real quick. A 34-point favorite against UConn. The biggest – I saw the Fear the Wave blog said that this is the biggest spread that they've had in, like, 30-some years or something like that. So the total number of yards that Tulane puts on UConn this week.
Total number of yards.
This is a home game.
For Tulane?
For right? Tulane, yes.
Well.
And then after this, we will get into that game and the others.
Well, so UConn's defense is not as bad as they once were, but they also just gave up 500 yards to the USF. So I'm going to go 620 because I think Tulane's just going to absolutely take it to them.
620?
Yeah, they're going to put up some yards.
That's a high number, my friend.
Dude, go big or go home.
I like it, though. Has UConn had a 600 yards game against them this year? Last year, that was like the regular.
Right. I don't think so, if I'm being completely honest, because they haven't played. Maybe UCF put up. Let me look at the UCF. I think is the only one I would say. Mate, yeah, they had UCF had 607.
Oh, just got over.
Yeah, but they're better this year. It doesn't look like it, but they are better.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They're not as miserable as last year.
No, but they're still bad.
They are still bad. There is no argument about that.
That is true.
And guess what? We don't have to talk about them soon. All right. At this time, let's flip it to what's going on in week, like we said earlier, week 7. It's unbelievable.
It's going to be week 14 before we know it, and then we're going to be like, where did the season go?
Yep. All right, couple big games in this conference this weekend. Well, tight games, I guess I should say. There really are some, like I said earlier, some iffy ones. You can't really say that one team is going to dominate other than Tulane. Let's start it off with those Temple Owls. Like I said earlier, they are taking on Memphis. Memphis, 5-0, ranked number 23 in the country. Games at noon, you can watch it on ESPN2. Tigers are a 6-point favorite. And like I said earlier, this is Temple's homecoming. So, Joe, I'll let you get it started before I talk about.
Well, let me ask you one question. How do you feel about that line? Or am I giving away your underdogs against the spread picks?
No, I never include Temple.
Oh, that's fair. That's smart.
Yeah, because we have to do the preview and prediction for the site, I do put a, you know, obviously we pick a score for it, so if you want to see what I think, there you go there, but I never will put Temple in the against the spread piece.
Well,
even though I should, because I feel like I know more about them than any team.
Well, here are my two biggest questions. I mentioned this before. What Temple team are we going to get? Because we have the Temple Owls that can beat Georgia Tech and Maryland, but we also have the Temple Owls that lose to a 2-4 Buffalo team, which that loss looks worse and worse as the season goes on. Not that Maryland and Georgia Tech were like super great wins, but at the time the Maryland win was a pretty big deal, and beating Georgia Tech is meh, whatever. So I want to know what. They're at home. You said it was homecoming, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that, I don't know how much that has to do with anything, but that could be a factor. And
just
then,
more drunk people there.
There you go. And then the other thing is Memphis. What offense are we going to see from Memphis? Obviously, we talked about Kenneth Gainwell and his explosion over the last few weeks, but are we going to see a Brady White that is contributing to the offense and making them better, or are we seeing a Brady White that's timid and conservative with his decision making and probably maybe throwing a couple picks or turning the ball over? So what are we going to see from him? And then their defense kind of took a step back last week against UM Monroe. So not that Temple's offense is, humming at all, but
no, it's sputtering. The offense is sputtering right now.
Yeah, just like last year, which is weird.
It's like we talked about, I can't remember now if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, but it's kind of crazy with the new coaching staff how there's so many similarities between this team and last year's team. But, I mean, for Temple, as has been the case for, maybe 10 years since this revolution of being not absolutely awful anymore. I mean, we used to be UConn. That's the honest truth. We used to be the team that everybody laughed about. But so it's been defense, and they're literally carrying this team because the offense, while it has its bright spots, it's there's games where you really don't understand why they're just not almost scoring at will. I mean, the East Carolina game, it took a lot of time for them to finally get it going. And then, it came down to the defense. And, they do have something special with Ray Davis. The kid is, when we got to see him in the press conference a couple weekends ago, you could just see, he just looks the part of a running back. He just has the build. And some of those guys, I've been around some college football players now, and you don't necessarily see, especially for a true freshman. He just looks like a guy that he's just going to be next in that lineage that the Owls have kind of put out now with Reichwell Armstead and Bernard Pierce and I'm missing, Jahad Thomas was more a little bit of a smaller guy, but literally guys that that are going to probably be at that next level. But then to answer your question about Memphis, I kind of agree with what you said about them. You never know what you're getting with them because we kind of expect them to be a team that scores 50 points a game. And, yeah, they finally did do that last week, and they had to against ULM, who, by the way, is not terrible this year. But, I guess just dating back because we didn't see them put up a ton of points really against anybody, let's say, decent. You put up 50 against Southern. What does that really mean? Put up 42 against South Alabama again. Yeah, these are two. South Alabama, not to crap on them too much, but they're almost a FCS team to me. And then they always seem to struggle with Navy. We talked about that last week. So what team do we get again from them? Who knows? But if you have to ask me who's going to win, it's Temple, of course.
Jeez, all right. I like the confidence, but it's...
They're going to be in... You'll see them in P6 Pick'em this week.
Yeah, they're not winning.
I like the defense.
I like Memphis' offense a lot more.
Just a couple weeks ago, you were crapping on Memphis. My love for them, now all of a sudden, it's the other way around.
Didn't crap on them. Gosh, you're so dramatic.
I'm just in game week already for Memphis.
There you go. I like it.
I'll be there again this week, too. Looking forward to it. All right, next up on the docket is another. It probably would have gotten way more attention if De'Aaron King was still the quarterback for the Cougars, but it is the number 25 Cincinnati Bearcats on the road against Houston. It's at 3:30. You can also see that game on ESPN2. And what I sent to you, I believe it was yesterday, is I'm a little bit surprised to see that Cincinnati is a 7-point favorite in this game.
Yeah, and that has a lot to do with their, their win last week, but
obviously,
still, I think you said it. You felt it was high, right?
Yes,
that's what I feel. Remember what you said.
I mean, I know that I pay attention to this stuff a little bit more than you do, but to me, that feels 3-4 points too high. Because Houston, like we've talked about already, Houston's not dead. I think a lot of the public thinks so because the King is gone, but you and I know that they're not dead.
No.
And you would think, Vegas being who they are, they would kind of think a little bit of the same way as well. Right. Especially after they got hit pretty hard with a lot of people taking Houston, knowing that they were going to knock off North Texas.
Yeah, it was. There's been a lot of unknown with Houston for the first, up until this point. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and people don't really know. There's obviously a ton of overreactions to everything that's happened. And Cincinnati's more than capable of covering that 7-point spread, but it also comes down to, can they keep their emotions in check after winning a big game, and now they're going on the road against a team that at this point has nothing to lose, and they're playing a bunch of younger guys who are learning the system, and now they've had 2 weeks off to prepare for this team, and they kind of got a recipe for how do you stop this offense, and getting pressure on Desmond Ridder is going to be something they need to do, and that's something Houston struggled with all year, so that'll be interesting. And then what does Clayton Tune look like in his second start? And this is probably, this is the toughest defense that he's going to face all year.
No doubt about that.
So that's going to be interesting to see how he responds. The offensive line, obviously, there are questions up the middle. The tackles are fine, but most of the pressure this year has come up the middles. And we saw last week what Cincinnati's defense is capable of doing, and Tune also has to face a secondary. Just everything about Cincinnati's defense is tough, and that secondary, I think they had 3 interceptions against Gabriel last week.
Yes.
And they, they knocked him around, and they rattled him, and Tune's a sophomore, so that's another young guy that's still learning how to play the position and how to be a starter, so you can expect pressure early on. They're going to try to get in his head, and that how he responds to that is going to determine how the game goes.
Yeah, I totally agree with a lot of what you just said there. I think the key will be, Cincinnati, just came off a huge win, arguably maybe biggest win that they've had in a long time, just because it's kind of thrusted them into the national spotlight once again. It's been a while since Cincinnati has been in that spotlight. Even though last year they had the 11 wins, they never really seemed to get the attention that they deserved. But then on the flip side, they got to go on the road to a Houston team who, Dana Holgorsen had 2 weeks, like you said before, to prepare for this. And it also gives Tune some time to get those reps that he wasn't getting with King in the mix. And I don't know, there is the potential there for an upset here. I could totally see it. That's why it surprises me that the line is a 7.1.
I'm right there with you. I feel good about an upset, but I also can see it depends on if Cincinnati lets last week affect them at all.
Exactly.
So we'll
I think between that and the 2 weeks for Houston, I think there's a lot, there's, you literally could butt heads on this one. This one could literally come down to maybe 3 overtimes. That would be pretty cool.
I would love it.
All right, the other 3:30 game that you can watch on CBS Sports Network.
Your favorite station.
Now that I have it this year, magically, I didn't pay. I don't think I'm paying anymore for it, but all of a sudden I have it. But it is 2-2-3 teams. It's BYU on the road at South Florida. The Cougs are a 6.5-point favorite on the road. BYU hasn't done anything, to me at least, necessarily impressive. But to be a 7-point favorite on the road, I think that's kind of just tells you just how bad people think of USF right now. I mean, they're in some total disarray. I mean, they've got on-the-field issues, off-the-field issues, people wanting the coach gone. It's just a mess down there in Tampa right now.
Yep, it's bad. But like you said, BYU's not exactly making it look much easier. So there is that going for USF. If if BYU just decided, hey, we're just going to join a conference so that we don't have to schedule like half of the Pac-12 and a handful of other, I think they have Boise State on their schedule.
Mm-hmm. I think that's coming in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, just like an insane schedule, and we talked about this coming into the year and early on, I believe. It's like they're just fighting to go 6-6, and like that's not setting. You're not setting your kids up for success with that. You're not setting the coaching staff up for success scheduling that way. I understand there's a money aspect and you're, getting recognition, but at a certain point, you either have to have the recruiting and the kids that are, necessary to win double digit games in a season, or you join a conference, and then that way you only have four really tough games. Then you might have a couple during, in your conference play. And it's just, they're just not, I don't know. I understand why they're doing some things, but I just feel like, why would you want to go to BYU just to try to go 6-6?
Zero disagreements with everything you just said. But don't join the American. I hope you're not trying to say they should replace UConn.
No.
Because of the distance aspect. It's just way too far.
Well, it's like West Virginia in the Big 12, which still doesn't make sense.
Touche. You are very right about that one. All right, let's move on. Well, we don't have to talk about this one much. Weird time. That's the only thing I can really have to say about this. You don't see many 3:45 starts. I don't know what that's all about, but I said it earlier, Tulane is a 34-point favorite against a 1-4 UConn team. If you want to watch it, it's on ESPNU. I don't know what...
How is it on ESPNU? I think that's the weirder part. It's why? UConn. Why is that not on ESPN Plus?
That is a good question, Ashley. Maybe that's more credit to Tulane. I'm not sure how it works. If those ESPNU games are prepared before the season, I have no idea how that works, to be honest. But yeah, that is a little bit funny. AAC media deal. We talked about it over the
coming
summer.
Coming through already.
And what? Maybe this is the last time UConn is on TV. They weren't on TV last week. You couldn't watch them live. Had to watch them on tape delay. And then last game of the week, I think arguably, well, obviously the spread shows that as well, but it'll be the hardest game to pick this week, and it is Navy, who I said earlier is 3-1 on the road against Tulsa, who's 2-3 this year. You said it earlier, much better than their record shows. That game is also on ESPNU at 7:30. Get two teams that honestly I'm kind of interested in watching, just because I think this is finally maybe some like equal competition between them. I mean, we kind of both generally feel that these are the two bottom teams in the West, so we're going to see here who's not in the basement of that part of the division there. But obviously two contrasting offenses. I think Tulsa, like I said earlier, has just been way more underrated, because, I mean, their schedule hasn't been too nice to them so far.
No, but I think they've handled well so far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think that has kind of been the case like the past couple of years. You know, we talk about them early. We're talking about how they're keeping up with even their out-of-conference teams. But and then when we get to conference play, they kind of just, I don't know, just not the same team all of a sudden, at least not last year. I just remember them kind of falling apart. But against the Navy team that seems to have, I don't want to say more balance, but, the threat is there, and that's what was missing from their offense. And then on the flip side, you alluded to Tulsa finally having a quarterback that can, I mean, granted, he threw three interceptions in the first half last week, but still had them out with the lead and made SMU have to come back with that epic comeback.
Right, and it's funny. Well, for both teams, it's the pass, the evolution of the passing game that has made their seasons better than we expected. With Navy, we obviously knew Malcolm Perry is going to be a starter at the beginning of the year, and it just became a question of can he revive the magic that he had 2 years ago? And obviously last year was not a good situation for him, but can the coaching staff work with him to put him in a better position to succeed? And obviously we've seen that that is what's going on right now. The coaching staff's put him in great positions to make good passes, and he's actually throwing a handful of nice balls too. And the same thing with Tulsa, just obviously very different, is their quarterback held them back the last 2 years, whether that was Seth Boomer, Luke Skipper, or Chad President. They couldn't find someone that could consistently make defenses not stack the box and try to stop Shamari Brooks and Corey Taylor. So, and like you said, Zach Smith, he threw three picks last week, but given what they were dealing with the last 2 years, they're going to take any steps that they can make in that at that position. So he makes their team a lot better. There's a threat to pass the ball, and it's a legitimate threat. Ask SMU. They were struggling to stop Tulsa's offense the entire time. And not only does that give them a passing attack, but it opens up running lanes for two of the better running backs in the conference.
Well, if you got to give me a winner,
Tulsa.
Same. Got to stick with my preseason prediction.
There you go.
And just like that, we wrap up another episode of the Underdog Podcast. If you're not following us on Facebook and Twitter, please make sure you're doing so. Check out our buddies, Joe and Eric, doing the Conference USA podcast. They do a terrific job over there. And until next week, thanks for listening to our Joe Talk.